Welcome to S&C Critical Insights. I'm Alex Wilshire, a partner in S&C's litigation group. Today we're going to talk about trends in 2018 in spoofing enforcement by the U.S. Department of Justice and the CFTC. With me today to discuss is one of my litigation partners, Katie MacArthur. Katie is the co-coordinator of the Commodities Futures and Derivatives Group. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Alex. The CFTC has made spoofing cases a top enforcement priority, with penalties of more than $70 million being imposed in spoofing resolutions announced just since the start of last year. In January of this year, the CFTC Director of Enforcement, James McDonald, announced the creation of a spoofing task force that includes personnel from each of the offices of the Enforcement Division working to coordinate the division's efforts nationwide in the realm of spoofing. Alex, what are we seeing from the Department of Justice in this area under the new administration? Has there been any dialing back of the enforcement priorities with respect to spoofing cases?
Not at all. To date, there have been nearly a dozen people charged in criminal spoofing cases. From my perspective, in 2018, the most interesting development so far has been the acquittal of a spoofing defendant up in Connecticut. That defendant's name is Andre Flotron. He was a commodities trader at a major bank, and he was only the second person to go to trial in a criminal spoofing case. DOJ was able to get a conviction in the first case, but in the second case, they had an acquittal. And so one question that comes from that, obviously, is based on that bad result for the Department of Justice, are they more likely to walk away from criminal charges on spoofing in the future? And based on what we know so far, the answer does appear to be no. The first data point on that is Sondra Moser, who's a senior person at the Department of Justice. She acknowledged the month after the acquittal that while they were disappointed in the trial outcome, they do consider these to be difficult but worthwhile cases. And she said that the Department of Justice is not backing away from spoofing prosecutions. In addition, it appears that there may have been some unique circumstances in the Flotron trial that may have contributed to that outcome that maybe won't be present in future cases. So, for example, in that case, due to some nuances around venue that I won't get into here, the government ultimately was only able to pursue a conspiracy count against the defendant, as opposed to also being able to charge the jury with substantive spoofing counts. And in addition, with respect to the government's proof, while they had cooperating witness testimony, their evidence was lacking in terms of other direct evidence of bad intent. And so in other cases, we have seen additional evidence, such as, you know, being able to look at the coding in a computer algorithm to infer intent, or by just having contemporaneous communication with the trader and other people about their intent to spoof. Beyond that acquittal in the case, the other most interesting development in 2018 has been the announcement that Katie referred to at the top about all the new prosecutions and collaboration with the CFTC and the various exchanges around spoofing. And Katie, that level of cooperation does make sense, I think, particularly given that the current director of enforcement at the CFTC, Jamie McDonald, previously had been a federal prosecutor at the Southern District of New York.
Absolutely. And Director McDonald has been clear that he wants to leverage some of the tools traditionally employed by the Department of Justice to further enhance cooperation in matters before the CFTC. In June of last year, the CFTC announced its first use of non-prosecution agreements. Those NPAs were awarded to three individual traders who became cooperators in order to assist the CFTC's spoofing case against their employer and some of their coworkers. The employer in that case ultimately paid a total of $25 million just to settle the charges against it. The consent order entered in that case indicated that the company had cooperated with the CFTC's investigation, including by expanding its inquiry beyond the group of traders that had initially been identified to the company by the exchange and providing a subsequent self-report of potentially violative trading conduct by some other traders. Notwithstanding that level of cooperation, penalty that was applied in that case, as I said, $25 million, reflects really the highest penalty we've seen from the CFTC in a negotiated resolution that related only to spoofing. Notably, the two individuals who did not become cooperators in that case also faced significant penalties. They paid between $200,000 and $350,000 each with a 6-month trading ban for each of them in order to resolve the CFTC charges against them. Alex, what does this stark difference in the outcome for the individual traders mean for traders who receive inquiries, either from their employers or from the exchanges, about their trading activity?
Well, I think the most obvious thing that traders should bear in mind going forward is that they should take any inquiry extremely seriously, whereas a few years ago, one might have been able to assume that worst case scenario, the outcome would have been a settlement for spoofing with the exchange or possibly the CFTC. But now, given the Department of Justice's level of interest in spoofing and given the level of cooperation with the CFTC and exchanges that I mentioned earlier, there really is the potential for a spoofing investigation to turn into a criminal investigation as well. And I think one other point for traders to bear in mind is if you do have a spoofing investigation that you become part of, it's critically important to have someone think about the evidence and present the evidence from your perspective. Where we are now is that the exchanges and the regulators have extremely sophisticated tools and data analytic tools to look at trading conduct. But what they're looking for are the symptoms of improper spoofing. They're not looking at all the other trading that's consistent with legitimate trading practices. And so what you need to bear in mind is that the people looking at the trading conduct are starting by looking at canceled orders and trying to infer from that that perhaps there's bad intent to be spoofing. That, you know, does bear the hallmarks of hindsight bias, and so it's definitely important to have somebody presenting all the other trading activity from your perspective. Katie, in light of the recent developments in the enforcement arena, what should companies, including their internal lawyers and compliance officers, be thinking about?
It's really clear that the exchanges, the regulators, the enforcement authorities have an expectation that trading firms are monitoring their trading activity in order to identify and prevent spoofing. As a result, it's essential that compliance departments have in place a really robust process for reviewing traders' order activity for those potential indicia of spoofing, and that companies actually investigate and address trading activity that may be flagged by their surveillance programs. Some of the criteria to be applied would include, for example, having orders on both sides of the market, in other words, to buy and to sell at the same time with a visible size discrepancy between the two sides, a flipping pattern, which would include canceling a buy order and simultaneously switching it to a sell order at the same price or vice versa, a pattern of placing multiple orders at different price levels and canceling those orders before they're filled, as well as a high percentage of canceled or modified orders when compared to the trader's total orders, or having a high proportion of orders that are canceled relatively quickly, for example, in less than a few seconds. And because spoofing is an intent-based violation, identifying spoofing ultimately means identifying the set of orders that were placed without any intention that they ever would be executed. There's no clearly defined trading pattern or bright line rule that companies can easily apply to distinguish between lawful trading activity and violative spoofing conduct. But I think a combination of the criteria I've just described may be helpful in identifying activity that's likely to raise questions.
Thank you for listening. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at salcrom.com.